This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Pro Farmer finished up its crop tour last week by issuing its U.S. harvest predictions after scouting through seven corn and soybean producing states. Brian Grady of Pro Farmer led the eastern leg of the tour and talks about the final numbers.
Pro Farmer estimates the national corn crop at 14.820 billion bushels on an average yield of 177.5 bushels per acre. Now, we put a plus or minus 1% range on that. On the yield, that would be a range of 175.7 to 179.3. For the production, that would be a range of 14.672 to 14.968. On the soybeans, we put the national average yield at 52.5 bushels per acre, giving us production of 4.362 billion bushels, plus or minus 2% range on the soybeans, 51.5 bushels to 53.6 bushels, and the production would be 4.275 bushels up to 4.449 billion bushels.
Grady says the consistency of the soybean crop across the Corn Belt probably stood out the most in his eyes. However, the soybeans will need some rain to help finish them off. He says the final harvest predictions always look different than the actual crop tour numbers because Pro Farmer takes in multiple factors from outside the tour to get their final numbers.
Crop tour data that I talked about Monday through Thursday is objective data from the actual crop tour. The Pro Farmer estimates that I gave are Pro Farmer estimates only and not associated with crop tour. So we take into account the crop tour data, and then we take into account other factors like acreage. We reduce harvested corn acreage by 525,000 acres with 300,000 acres of that coming out of Iowa. We look at how we think the crop will finish, weather patterns looking forward, areas outside of crop tour. So that all comes into play.
Mike Zazzolo is the president of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas. He's followed the Pro Farmer Tour results for years and talks about what stands out to him in this year's findings.
They are looking at this in real time, that they did not say Illinois was a bin buster. I think that was the biggest thing, and that Indiana was variable. To me, that's the biggest issue that I have seen with the actual numbers coming in at the end of the week match up the closest I've ever seen in the years I followed the Pro Farmer Tour with their comments on the road and their tweets on the road and their data sheets that they show from the road.
He says Pro Farmer's 2020 results likely paint a more realistic picture for the corn harvest than the August USDA predictions.
Many times historically, based upon my memory, you get the sense that the crop is not as big as USDA's August crop forecast, but then by the Friday final number, the Pro Farmer reaches to within a bushel or a bushel and a half of USDA's number. They did not do that. We're talking about a 183 plus yield in USDA's eyes versus a 177 and a half yield in Pro Farmer's eyes, with a lot of weather ahead of us that could potentially even take that yield down more. Likely to build the yield a lot in the corn.
Zazzolo also says the soybean numbers look good. However, he's hearing from producers that drought in some parts of soybean country might be cutting back on soybean harvest.
Producers are telling me overwhelmingly that we are stepping back in terms of yield potential in the soybeans. And so the 53.6 top end number that you could derive out of the pod counts that Pro Farmer gave us, probably going to be very difficult to meet if we stay dry another week. And that 51.5 number, that's the low end of the range, is probably more accurate. But it's a lot harder this time of year to do a tour in soybeans, especially when you've had such a good start to a crop, but you've turned really hot and dry at a very critical time period.
Again, Mike Zazzolo is the president of Global Commodity Analytics. And as Brian Grady mentioned in that last report, over 300,000 acres of cropland in Iowa were taken out of production due to the historic derecho storm that swept across the state earlier this month. Last week, new data was collected by the National Weather Service saying that the initial surveyed wind speeds were actually a lot less than actually happened. In the revised estimates released Wednesday of last week, the National Weather Service out of the Quad Cities said the maximum wind speeds were approximately 140 miles an hour in the southwest portion of Cedar Rapids. Those wind speeds were the equivalent of a Category 4 hurricane or an EF3 tornado. Other new estimates show straight-line winds were as high as 100 to 130 miles an hour in parts of Benton, Lynn, Jones, Cedar, and Clinton counties in Iowa. Iowa State climatologist Justin Gilson recently said the derecho held together for 770 miles over 14 hours throughout the Midwest. He says the storm system lost its strength as it entered western Ohio.
The August 10th derecho event formed in the early morning hours in southeastern South Dakota and moved into Nebraska as a pretty put together line of thunderstorms. It crossed the border into Iowa about 8 or 9 o'clock, and some severe weather, or some severe thunderstorm warnings were issued along that line. But we weren't necessarily sure that the line would hold together. And it wasn't until it moved into central Iowa that we really start to see the thunderstorm complex strengthen and those wind speeds start to pick up. And this is as the derecho is starting to consolidate.
Other wind speeds from the storm reported to the National Weather Service were 106 miles an hour at a personal weather station 2 miles west northwest of La Grande, Iowa, 99 miles per hour at the Marshalltown, Iowa airport, and 90 miles per hour south of Chelsea, Iowa. The 140 mile per hour wind gusts in southwest Cedar Rapids reportedly caused damage to an apartment complex in that area by removing its roof, outside walls, and some inside walls from the top floor. The winds also destroyed or damaged numerous outbuildings, barns, grain bins, homes, mobile homes, trees, and power poles. Now moving on to the latest trade news. More trade talks between China and the United States are on the horizon. However, the questions on if and when remain. Last week, the Trump administration declined to confirm any plans to meet with China regarding Phase 1. According to Reuters, a spokesperson for China's Commerce Ministry last week stated bilateral talks would be held in the coming days to evaluate the agreement's progress. Previously planned for August 15th, China claims the meeting was moved due to a scheduling conflict, yet President Trump claims he canceled the meeting because he says, quote, "I don't want to deal with them now." China is buying more U.S. commodities, a promise made in the Phase 1 agreement. However, the most recent data suggests China is behind pace to fulfill those commitments. China has committed to buying more new crop soybeans and sorghum from the U.S., and while China is purchasing more U.S. new crop corn, the purchases still lag from prior levels. In latest news out of Washington, Congress is not considering any coronavirus relief until September, and the streamlined package won't likely include agriculture. Senate Republicans indicate they plan to introduce a skinny bill next month, according to the Hagstrom Report. The Senate returns to session on September 8th, following the Labor Day holiday, and the House is scheduled to return for committee meetings on September 8th as well, with the full House returning to session September 14th. The delay sets up speculation the general coronavirus aid may be included in spending bills Congress must pass by September 30th, the end of the current fiscal year. Congress must also pass the spending bills to avoid a government shutdown. Many in agriculture agree more aid is needed for farmers and ranchers facing losses from COVID. The failed HEALS Act in the Senate would likely have provided an additional $20 billion for agriculture. The CARES Act included $14 billion for ag, and the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program includes $16 billion for agriculture as well. The Department of Agriculture's Risk Management Agency last week announced changes to the federal crop insurance prevent planting coverage. RMA will implement the changes for most spring crops with prevented planting coverage next year and for all crops with prevented planting coverage in 2022. The changes include expanding the 1-in-4 requirement nationwide. Currently, only producers in the Prairie Pothole National Priority Area are subject to the requirement, which requires producers to plant acreage in at least one of the four most recent crop years to be eligible for coverage on those acres. RMA made several modifications to existing policy and procedures to ensure prevent plant payment adequately reflects the crop the producer intended to plant. USDA also made changes to cover second crop plantings following the failure of the first crop in a field. Finally, USDA will allow the use of an intended acreage report for the first 2 years for producers in a new county where they have never produced a crop. In other news out of the USDA, the Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service will be hosting a virtual public meeting on Salmonella in September. Federal agencies included in the meeting will discuss the commitment to reduce pathogen contamination to decrease salmonella infections associated with regulated food items. The week before the public meeting, USDA's Office of Food Safety will release the, quote, roadmap to reducing salmonella, driving change through science-based policy, which outlines how USDA will advance programs and policies that are science-based, data-driven, and promote innovations to reduce salmonella in meat, poultry, and egg products. Salmonella is a foodborne pathogen of concern in multiple FSIS-regulated food products. To address foodborne sources of salmonella, FSIS is committed to aggressively targeting salmonella in regulated meat, poultry, and processed egg products through various strategies and initiatives. The virtual public meeting will be held on September 22nd from 9 a.m. to 3:15 p.m. Eastern Time. Registration information is available online at fsis.usda.gov. And in the latest news out of the Board of Trade, the CME Group Thursday of last week announced planned changes to live and feeder cattle futures price limits. Pending approval by the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, CME Group will implement the changes on Monday, October 5th. The changes amend daily price limits to adjust the current initial daily price limit for live cattle from 3 to 4 cents a pound on futures and feeder cattle from 4 to 5 cents a pound. CME Group will maintain the existing practice of establishing expanded price limit levels at 150% of initial price limit levels, which will result in an increase in the expanded price limit for live cattle from 4 to 6 cents a pound and the initial increase in the expanded price limit for feeder cattle from 6 to 7 cents a pound. The CME Group also seeks to replace the current fixed daily price limit regimes consisting of a fixed price limit and expansion mechanism with a variable price limit regime that will be price-based and reset annually. And in other National Ag news for your Monday, the National FFA Organization last week announced a record-high student membership of 760,113. That's an increase from last year's 700,170 members. The top five student member states are Texas, California, Georgia, Florida, and Oklahoma. Interest in FFA and agricultural education continues to grow as membership continues to increase, as well as the number of chapters. This year, the organization has more than 115,831 Latino members and more than 40,000 black members and more than 1,200,000 members who are American Indian or Alaska Native. 49% of membership is female, with 51% being male. FFA chapters can be found in 24 of the 25 largest U.S. cities, and National FFA CEO Mark Peschel says, quote, as we continue to bring agricultural education and FFA to more students, we see the enthusiasm of this generation reflected in the growth of our organization. The National FFA organization includes more than 8,700 local FFA chapters. And finally, here on your Monday, we'll take a look at local ag news. The Montgomery County Farm Bureau will be hosting an informational meeting about wind farms coming up on Wednesday, September 2nd. It'll be held at 6 p.m. at the Farm Bureau office in Hillsboro in the Courthouse Square. Laura Harmon of the Illinois Farm Bureau will be speaking. A Zoom meeting option will also be offered for those who wish to attend virtually or by phone. Wind energy companies are prospecting acreage and contacting landowners in Montgomery County, and the Farm Bureau is working to provide an educational opportunity before farmers and landowners get busy with harvest and they're forced to make a rush decision. The meeting will address several issues and concerns that may arise with placement, management, and contract negotiations of wind energy. This will be an educational meeting to assure the members of Montgomery County Farm Bureau have the proper resources necessary for making wise choices concerning their land and its future for generations to come. For more information or questions about this meeting, you can contact the Montgomery County Farm Bureau office at 532-6171, or you can email Farm Bureau Manager Katie Wilson at kwilson@montcofb.com. Pre-registration for the meeting is required, and a face covering will be also required to attend the meeting in person. If you'd like to attend virtually or over the phone, you can ask for the Zoom meeting information at your time of registration, and this meeting is a Montgomery County Farm Bureau member event only. And that'll conclude your Ag News here for a Monday morning, but remember, you can always send us your Ag News by an email at WSMI at WSMIradio.com. So again, for this Monday morning, August 24th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.